Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Joining me here on this Monday morning for another CIO Strategy Snapshot, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, welcome back. I know it has been a couple of weeks since you and I last spoke. Of course, there is plenty to catch up on, so looking forward to doing that with our listeners this morning, though. Welcome back. Great to be on with you today.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's good to be back after a bit of a break and to recharge, and happy Monday.
So with that, Jason, as mentioned, a lot has taken place over the past couple of weeks. Perhaps a good place to start being with the data calendar. Now, we have witnessed a string of data releases that have surprised to the downside. So this accounts for the June employment report as well as the recent June CPI print, so the latest round of inflation data. So can you simply begin, Jason, by reviewing these recent data releases for us?
Well, you're right that the data we got for June, and we've got a big chunk of it so far. The consistent message is that the data is by and large kind of surprised to the downside, which is actually in some ways kind of a good and bad story. You know, the good aspect is, as you alluded to on the CPI front, inflation data for June came in below expectations for the CPI data. A particular kind of the core data was kind of a positive across the board. Other data we got on Friday for PPI was, especially the core data, was also, if not to the downside, but showed continued sort of disinflation trends. So you couple that with where we got good data, inflation data for May, where a lot of it was kind of across the board below expectations. We now have, in some way, 2 months of below expectations for inflation data, and then you add in the April data that was in line. After a very hot first quarter, the second quarter inflation data tells a consistent story of disinflation, resuming, and the disinflation trend over the past 2 years is kind of fully in force. So that is the downside surprise. That is the positive aspect. If we then turn to the growth data, though, that is kind of less inspiring. It continues to surprise to the downside, whether it is sort of sentiment data, but also kind of harder production, actual economic activity data. As a result, second quarter GDP, at least based on the Atlanta Fed tracking estimate, is down to about 2%. It was over 3% for much of the quarter. So we're definitely seeing some moderation. On the labor market, as you mentioned, the headline numbers were below expectations. But really the key point that we've seen in the labor market, across the board of all sorts of data, is that we're seeing consistent sort of cooling and a rebalanced labor market. And in some ways, a labor market that looks a lot like it did back in sort of January of 2020, right, before the pandemic hit, where it was a solid labor market and strong, but it wasn't, overly tight. It wasn't sort of inflationary. And that's what we're seeing with the labor market data. But there's also aspects of it that raise a little bit of concern that the headline number is still a solid number, but other data points, whether it is based on the unemployment rate rising, quit rates, hiring rates, they're all actually probably a little bit below where they were pre-pandemic. And given the general direction of travel, sort of raises some questions of whether maybe the labor market's a little softer than the headline number implies. You couple that with other data on consumer spending that's been showing some signs of softness, and we will get June retail sales data on Tuesday, July 16th. That could show again that growth data is certainly moderating. The question is how much is it moderating? So, the story we've seen thus far for June is consistent with our expectations that the economy is cooling off after being red hot for a long period of time. And that's true in inflation. It's true in growth. The question is, especially on the growth front, how much is it cooling? Is it going from cooling to potentially kind of cracking? And that remains to be seen. We don't think so, but that is the kind of the concern for the markets right now.
So, Jason, with that, with the labor market and inflation softening in terms of how this translates to the potential path forward for monetary policy, does this now clear the path for the Fed to begin cutting rates as we look ahead to September? And how might this all be signaled by the Fed during the upcoming July meeting as far as what their path forward looks like?
Well, if you look at market pricing, the path certainly is cleared, because the market's pricing, basically over 100% probability of a cut in September, which really means that it's actually pricing in some probability of upwards of a 50 basis point cut at that meeting. And now through the end of the year, it's more than two cuts are being priced into the markets. Our view, for a while now has been that the Fed's going to cut twice this year, once in September, once in December. And the trends for the inflation data and the growth data are all very consistent with that. So it's not a foregone conclusion that the Fed will cut. They will get two more months of economic data, both July and August CPI data, inflation data, as well as other growth data, including how the labor market's doing. If there's signs of, you know, the disinflation trend reversing, stalling, inflation picking up, the labor market not showing any signs of cooling, perhaps the Fed would feel justified in waiting until the end of the year before they start to cut. But assuming the recent trends are sort of indicative of the overall momentum of the economy slowing, you know, I think the case for the Fed to cut in September is quite strong. At the June FOMC meeting, they did update the dots in a way that implied that the first cut wouldn't happen until December. So there would have to be some walking back by the Fed and Fed Chair Jay Powell in particular to sort of put September back on the table. The market's already pricing it, so that's kind of not that difficult. During his congressional testimony last week, Powell kind of emphasized the fact that both sides of the Fed's dual mandate, price stability and full employment, are now in play, and there's risks to both, which basically is a signal to say that they are now kind of almost equally focused on the labor market cooling. So that's a hint at the possibility that the September cut could be on the table. That testimony was before the June inflation data. Today, Powell is actually giving a speech or been interviewed at the D.C. Economic Club. So he will certainly be asked about how his views have changed in light of the economic, the inflation data that came out last week. It's likely he will continue to kind of reiterate the same message that the disinflation trend continues to be in motion. They've increased their confidence, but yet are not fully confident that it's on a trend towards getting back to the 2% target. So basically kind of, you know, give themselves some wiggle room so that the inflation data doesn't turn out the way they expect. You know, they haven't backed themselves in the corner of then having to walk a September cut back off the table. So it's likely both today, but also the FOMC meeting at the end of July, that's the kind of messaging, because they will get additional data, you know, before the September meeting. So it's more likely to be the same message you reiterated last week. That's what we're going to hear today. That's what we'll hear in a couple of weeks at the July FOMC meeting. But assuming the data moves in the trend that we think it will, a September hike or September cut right now looks, you know, quite likely. I wouldn't put it over 100% probability, you know, but I'd say it's quite likely at this point in time, given the overall trends in the economy.
So, Jason, in the wake of these data releases, we have seen some positive upward momentum across U.S. equity markets that continued this past Friday. We did see a surge in equities to close out the week. So, from your vantage point, what exactly is driving this investor sentiment, this momentum, and how critical is the Q2 corporate reporting season, which unofficially kicked off last week, for maintaining this positive investor sentiment?
Well, as we went into the summer, like certainly for much of June, as the markets were often hitting all-time new highs, and speaking of the S&P 500 specifically, you could say it was really driven by, you know, tech and some of the AI narrative. What we've seen in July, particularly since the data has been coming out, whether it's the labor market report or now the inflation data, is a bit of a broadening of the rally. It's really a rotation. So that's been fueled by the fact that I think Fed rate cut expectations are now, as I said, kind of fully back online for September cut. And as a result, I think kind of increasing confidence that if the Fed is able to cut soon because inflation allows them, this kind of extends the economic cycle. So what we saw last week, particularly on Thursday and Friday, is a big rotation in the markets. Small caps really outperformed in a way they haven't since last fall. And then even on Thursday, after the CPI data came out, we saw small caps based on the Russell 2000 index was up, whereas the S&P 500 was actually down. Given that kind of moves, which are pretty unusual to see, like the NASDAQ down where the Russell is up, suggest a lot of that was also positioning, that investors were caught offside. Short positioning in the Russell index were at a very elevated level. So as the market's rallying, I think part of what you saw was a bit of a short squeeze. There's always the question, once you get this position adjustment, how long it can last. I mean, it's maybe just a few days, a couple of weeks, not based on sort of fundamental drivers. I think for that, we need, to get a sustained rotation for multiple months. What we need is both this disinflation trend to continue, growth to remain solid, and the Fed to be able to do what I would classify as insurance cuts, meaning they're able to cut while growth is at or even above trend because inflation is falling. Right now, I think the weak link of that narrative is the growth story, you know, and whether growth is actually slowing down enough or so much that it does kind of raise concerns about the more cyclical parts of the economy, which is why there's a lot of emphasis on Q2 in terms of the earnings, how this will play out, but also the guidance that companies will give going forward. The official CIO view right now is that earnings for the second quarter are going to grow between 10 and 12% year over year. This would make it the best year-over-year quarter since the first quarter of 2022. It's about 3% higher than where consensus is. It typically can, you know, the markets or the actual results end up beating consensus by about 3%. And given the guidance coming into the quarters held up, that's sort of, you know, given us confidence to sort of forecast, you know, a relatively robust earnings story. The one caveat to this is that some of the early reporters for the second quarter. These are companies that have an earnings quarter that ends on the end of May. So we reported in June and early July. It's been a little bit underwhelming. It's been one of the weaker kind of early reporter seasons we've seen in a few years. Whether that's an anomaly or an actual indication of how the earnings season will come out, I think there is scope for maybe more downside disappointment to our numbers versus upside, you know, given some of that early guidance from other companies. Now, really what we need is to see some to alleviate the kind of growth concerns for the rally to kind of broaden out to be sustained. We need to see kind of good results, especially from the, you know, non-Mag 7, the 493 other companies in the S&P 500. This is the first quarter that we're forecasting. It will have positive growth for those 493 companies. That would be the first quarter since the fourth quarter of 22. So now that's, you know, 6 quarters ago. If that happens, that can certainly allow the markets kind of rally to broaden out. It'll take a few weeks to get us kind of earnings results to see that happen, but I would say that's probably the key for this to kind of rally to continue at least through July into early August, is that these earnings results not only kind of match our expectations, but also show that are broadening out, so it's not just being driven by a handful of tech stocks. The macro conditions suggest it's possible, but I think we actually need to see the data to get real confidence that that's going to actually take place.
Jason, as we close out, let's wrap up on positioning. So just accounting for current market conditions coupled with rate cuts expected on the horizon, how should investors think about positioning at the moment?
Well, a lot has certainly happened, in politics and the economy in the past few weeks since we last did one of these podcasts. But in many ways, our messaging from the June House update and the second half outlook are still very much applicable. For instance, one of the key messages is to position for lower rates, with the idea that central banks will be able to begin cutting rates. We saw that happening already outside of the U.S. in the second quarter, whether it was the Swiss National Bank, the ECB, the Bank of Canada. Our expectation was that the Fed would start cutting rates in September, and all the data we've seen, you know, over the past couple of weeks kind of reinforces that view. So positioning for lower rates means you're not just sitting, you know, kind of in money market funds, prepare for rates to go lower. We've seen bond yields kind of rally, you know, and fall as a result of this. To looking to buy kind of quality bonds remains a key part of that message. This includes whether it's high quality treasuries, munis, investment grade corporate bonds, you know, higher quality securitized products such as, you know, agency MBS and CMBS. Those all things can look relatively attractive. We expect rates to stay in the range, like the 10-year specifically, between 4-4.5%, and more likely to hit 4% before it hits 4.5% again. Within equities, we continue to like tech and sort of really within tech kind of focus on, AI specifically in some of the areas of the market that are going to be the biggest beneficiaries. But for the rest of the markets, I continue to see kind of quality growth stocks. Even though there's a possibility the market could sort of broaden out, we think it's more likely that these growth concerns are going to linger, and the companies that benefit most or at least best positioned to get through this environment are kind of quality growth companies. Just from a typical seasonal pattern, early July has been a good calendar part of the year. Once you get into August, and particularly September, October, that's historically when the markets have had more volatility. Given these market levels, we'd sort of also be a little bit cautious on terms of chasing the overall market levels. And the parts that could be most vulnerable, if there are any sort of pullback, are those kind of more growth-sensitive parts of the market, given sort of how the expectations have become relatively elevated. So kind of quality growth stocks are, you know, a kind of a way to sort of manage those expectations. And finally, I have to mention certainly the news of the week on the political front with the assassination attempt of former President Trump. The market certainly believe now this marginal increases his probability of winning. the market action in the early Monday morning doesn't suggest big shifts in that. And that's a key thing that we've reiterated in notes over the course of the weekend and today, is that when you get these sort of political developments, whether it's what happened over this weekend or going back to the debate between President Biden and former President Trump, I had a lot of questions about whether Biden will end up being forced to step down or will step down. The key thing is that for investors is to not overreact to any of these particular news developments, to focus on sort of long-term plan and realize ultimately other economic fundamentals, the Fed policy, that's going to drive the markets as much, if not more so, than any of the sort of political developments. So it does not sort of, the news over the weekend does not change sort of that key messaging. It does maybe tilt the odds a little more towards kind of the red sweep scenario, but by and large, we don't advocate big changes in portfolio position based on any of these political developments over the past few weeks.
Well, Jason, this was a very productive touch base, just given all that has taken place across the market, the economic, the political landscape over the past couple of weeks. So thank you for dropping by this morning to begin another trading week, keeping our listeners, our clients current on CIO's thinking when it comes to these topics and for the guidance when it comes to positioning. Do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
All right. Well, you're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.